thank you for letting me come here and, you know, join with you. Sex and love addiction is one of the most difficult addictions that I, as a therapist, have ever been faced with. And the reason for that is, and this I think is really key, this is what makes it different from all other addictions. Love addiction is a natural consequence of untreated codependence. All other addictions are distractions from the disease of codependence. All right? Codependence, I'm just going to run through this for those of you who don't know exactly what this is. I'll give it to you really briefly. Codependence is a group of symptoms that adults experience that there are five core symptoms that cause them to act immature. They're emotionally immature. All right? So the five core symptoms of codependence for adults, because children are not codependent. The first one has to do with self-esteem. The second one has to do with reality. The third core symptom has to do with moderation. That is not the M word that you wave to back and forth from extremes. The fourth one has to do with dealing with adult needs and wants and getting them met appropriately. And the fifth one is being able to do all of this with a set of boundaries called self-containment. I will tell you that these five core symptoms are what codependence is. You are not codependent on somebody. No. You are codependent inside, and that makes you behave in ways that are less than functionally adult. So the first core symptoms, I'm just going to go through these quickly, has to do with self-esteem. When you have codependence, self-esteem is something that, well, it's elusive at best. You get other esteem most of the time. You have little or no self-esteem. Sometimes you go over here and you have better than self-esteem. But the reason it's a problem, besides all those things that are happening in your head, is that you find yourself having to determine every time you meet somebody, every time you interact with somebody, including bosses and kids and parents and everyone, am I better than this person or am I less than this person? So a person who is codependent is always trying to determine where they stand on the self-esteem totem pole, more or less, where when that person is dealing with somebody. That takes a lot of energy. When you have self-esteem, you're able to say, I am just fine the way I am. Who I am as a human being is just dandy. Now my behavior, I need to make sure I'm monitoring that, but I don't have to determine whether I'm better than you or less than you in order to have a relationship or a conversation or even to check out at the grocery store. Now people who have codependence are doing this all the time and sometimes they aren't even aware of it. The second issue has to do with reality. People who have codependence have problems knowing their reality. They have to check their reality with other people. My 50 closest friends have to tell me whether I should go out with this person or not. Or my 50 closest friends have to tell me if my sponsor is telling me this, whether it's right or not, before I do anything. People, if you find yourself saying the words, I don't know, then you have problems with reality. Adults know. If you ask me something about myself, I should know this. And if I don't, instead of saying I don't know, I say, well, I'll get back to you on that. And then I'll think about it. I mean, these are quick and easy ways to get in recovery for codependence. Say, find the commonality in every that you have with everyone that helps with your self-esteem. Say, take the words I don't know out of your vocabulary and take the words I know but I'm not going to tell you out of my head. So if somebody asks me about me, I can say, I need to think about that. Or I can just tell them what I think. Or if I have boundaries, I can say, you know, I know the answer to that question. I don't think I'm going to tell you that right now. Boundaries, they're great. But I don't know tells my brain over and over again that I don't know myself. That's not good for your brain to hear. Okay? It starts believing you after a while. I'll tell you, I think Alzheimer's is hooked to this. You spend your whole life saying, I don't know. Guess what? Guess what happens? You don't know. So, there you have it. I know that's kind of a simplistic way of saying Alzheimer's, but I'll tell you what. People I know that have had this disease have spent their lives trying not to know about themselves. Denial, delusion. Okay, moderation. you're all addicts. Do I need to say more? Getting your adult needs and wants met. Now, this is one of the big issues for sex and love addicts, that many times when you find yourself wanting to get into a relationship, and once you're in the relationship, thinking that that person needs to meet your needs. You need to determine what are adult needs, what are child needs. Because most of the time, they're child needs. If you have codependence, I can almost assure you they're child needs. Because children, the adults who are codependent grow up in families where their needs and wants don't get met. And when those needs and wants don't get met, they don't just go away because you're 21. They start masquerading around and looking like and acting like adult needs and wants. And then you go around trying to get them met from partners and boyfriends and girlfriends and everything else. And then get mad at people because they don't meet them, okay? So knowing what your adult needs and knowing what your adult wants, being able to get them met appropriately when the times are right, that's a big one. Because, you know, the other thing that I've noticed a lot with people who are many addicts tend to be needless and wantless, or they go to the other end and they're just needy all over the place. But that goes to that moderation thing. All these interact together. Boundaries. Can I tell you the simple definition of boundaries is self-containment. It is not laying down boundaries for everyone else. That's called negative control. Okay? People have, they can act however they want in this world, do whatever they want in this world, and unless you have a gun pointed at you or a baseball bat or something like that, what you do with that and the way you handle it yourself has to do with your system of self-containment. So that when you have good boundaries, you're free as a bird to walk around and be in this world because you're not all worried and whacked out about it, how everyone else is acting. It doesn't matter. What matters is the way I feel about it, the way I respond, knowing my reality about it, and being able to contain myself about it. Okay? So when you're in recovery for codependency, that's what it looks like. When you have no boundaries, you know, when you have boundary issues, you might have no boundaries, you might have damaged boundaries, you might have walls. But none of those things work very well when you're trying to be in a relationship. They don't work very well in your life. But recovering from those things, are, you know, they're, you have to do them, and they happen in your brain. You have to do them. It's like what I tell my patients, you can't wait to feel this way. You can't wait to feel like you want to get your self-esteem. You can't wait to feel like, oh, okay, I'm ready for boundaries now. It's not going to happen. Now, no more than when somebody, some active addict, walks in my office and says, please help me learn the underlying issues of my addiction. After I'm done, you know, as I'm sitting there hungover, or I've just been, you know, I come from the topless bar, I say, no, you've got to go take care of that symptom first before you go underlying issues. Okay? You have to do it first. You have to say, okay, I'm going to do that, and I can assure you it won't feel comfortable. If it does feel comfortable, you're probably just doing the same thing over again. It won't feel comfortable to have boundaries, or to have self-esteem, or to know your reality, to be bold enough to tell somebody if they say, gee, you know, I'd really like to have a cup of coffee with you, and you've got the heebie-jeebies about them, to say, you know, no thank you. What a concept. Or to say, you know, I'm really attracted to that person. Okay, I already know my mother and dad showed up, so I think I'll find out who they are. Okay, so I'd like to have a cup of coffee with you. Is that okay? No? Okay. Boundary. It's not about me. I didn't do anything. Do when you're acting like a functional adult, you know when you've screwed up. Come on. You don't have to have somebody come over and explain it to you. I don't. I'm usually pretty clear when I've screwed up. Okay. So this is all codependence. Now you say, when I said that love addiction is a natural consequence of untreated codependence. And the way that works is this. If you have love addiction, your primary love addiction is to your mother and or your father. Plain and simple. Because when you grow up in a family that creates codependence instead of a functional adult, What happens is that you spend your childhood trying to get those two people, or one person, whoever your parents are, okay, there might be one, might be two. You spend your childhood trying to get those people's approval, their love, their attention, their support, anything from them. That's what you're trying to do. And while you're trying to do that, you're growing up. You're growing socially, psychologically, sexually, intellectually, physically. You're growing all those ways, all the time. If anybody has ever had kids, you know that watching them grow is like dynamic. They wake up some days and you say, I swear you grow one whole inch overnight. I mean, they are like that, emotionally in every way. But if you're a kid growing up in a family where your needs and wants aren't met, where you're being abandoned, abused, or neglected, where it's a less than nurturing environment, while you're growing up, because you're designed to do that, you are missing really key elements of your development. And so what happens when you get into a relationship is that all those childhood wounds, all those issues, all those unmet needs and wants get transferred over to your partner, and you turn into a child. You have an ego state. If you're feeling like you're being abandoned, this will come as a big surprise to this group. You can't be abandoned if you're an adult. You can't. The only one that can abandon you as an adult is you. So if you feel like you're being abandoned, you're not being an adult, you're in a state of codependence, and the next thing you have to do is go down here and find out what's happening with me and what do I need to get myself into a functional adult ego state. When people have codependence, they operate in ego states, like wounded child ego state, where they're always getting abandoned, they're always afraid, and they're also terrified. Because from 0 to 5 years old or 6 years old, if you're being abandoned, abused, and neglected, oh, you better believe it. You're feeling it. You're terrified out of your mind. You're devastated. You are abandoned. When people are leaving you and you're 3 years old, you are being left. You could die from that. Not necessarily so if you're 30, although it might feel that way because you get triggered back into that ego state. You also might be operating from an adapted adult child ego state, which means that you're acting like a 13-year-old or a 14-year-old or a 10-year-old. You know, if you remember being 13, having your first love, it's all you can think about. You just obsess about it. And you're afraid people are going to find out about it. And you start dreaming about it. You start thinking about it. You start thinking about all the kids you're going to have. And you think about all these. And you think about how that funny feeling in your tummy is and all that. That's when you're 13. If you're still doing that when you're 40, then you haven't grown yourself up. You're still being 13. And then wonder why can't these relationships work? Well, let's see. I'll use myself as an example. I'm a 60-year-old woman who has a 13-year-old girl driving the train down the relationship road. And I'm wondering, because the 60-year-old left the building. And the 13-year-old is going, hey, let's do this. Hey, look at that. Hey, you know what that means? Oh, you know, that's really good and that's really cute. And oh, let's find all the things out of that we can find out about how this is so wonderful and works, and let's create fantasies and outrageous, you know. And guess what? That kid's driving the bus. And so then I don't look like I'm 60 anymore. I don't feel like it either. And I'm not acting like it. And then I have my expectations, a 60-year-old woman's expectations. I'm turning to the 13-year-old and saying, so what do you think? Is this going to work out for me? What do you think I should do? No, I raised a child. I look back on that. Is there any way that I'm going to ask his opinion about a relationship? Excuse me, James. I know you're 14, you're big enough now. Could you please tell me how I should operate in this adult relationship? That's how crazy it is. Most of us would not do that. But when we go into that ego state, that's exactly what we're doing. We're turning inwards and saying, so, Donna Jean, what do you think? Should we do this? Should we do that? Instead of what adults do, which I'll talk about in a few minutes. I hope I could keep your attention that long. So that's why, you know, this is a hard, hard disease, because what you're trying to do is you're going after and you're getting immediately attracted to all of the really positive qualities sometimes, mostly the negative qualities of your primary caregivers, because they did not meet your needs. They didn't love you unconditionally, which is a birthright of every child. They didn't teach you what to do and how to do it. They didn't help you figure it out, like learn problem-solving skills, learn how to think logically, sit down and work with you when somebody was being a bully to you on the playground. Help you figure out what's wrong with that bat that the ball keeps going through it instead of yelling at you or telling you what a dumb shit you are. Excuse my language. If these things were happening to you, then that is still operating inside. And it doesn't grow up. You know, these different emotional states, they have windows of development. We know it's true that children go through windows of development, and while they're going through those windows of development, they're also developing in all these other ways, all across the board. So just like with reading, okay, this is my favorite. This is the greatest example. When a child learns to read between the ages of, say, 4 and 8, it becomes second nature to them. They will read for the rest of their life. They'll look at that, and if they can see it, those things back there, they'll just read it. They'll be driving along on the road, and they'll see a sign. They'll just read it. They'll pick up books in the bookstore and look through them and scan through them, and they'll just read it. And there won't be a conscious event happen for them. They won't say, well, I better read this now. Let's keep my brain focused on reading. They just do it. That's called second nature. And so if that child learns to read, that will happen for them. If they don't learn how to read, and it can be for many reasons, maybe they're moving all over the place, okay? Maybe their parent died. Maybe they have an alcoholic parent that's running around being crazy and they can't focus long enough to learn how to read. Maybe they have a bad teacher. Maybe there's a million things, but let's say that child doesn't learn how to read. Can the child learn how to read? Sure. Can the adult learn how to read? Absolutely. Will it be second nature? No. Once that window has closed, he can learn the skill. And when they learn the skill, they can open that book and they can say, read. I am reading now. And I have to focus on that in order for it to happen. But I can do it. So what happens with codependence and love addiction is that, yes, you can learn the skills about how to be in a relationship. You can learn the skills about self-care, that's job one, how to take care of yourself, how to feed yourself, how to get the correct amount of sleep, how to have a support system that you can call, not 50 people, a few that will be there for you when you need them, how to deal with your still living adult or your still living parents, for instance. There are all kinds of skills that you can develop so that you can be more functional as an adult human being. So I'm going to go back to something. So you, when you're getting in a relationship, this is where the love addiction crux happens. This is like a trauma bond, okay? So you, if you are automatically attracted to somebody, if you hear yourself saying the word soulmate, we're like soulmates, run away fast! Because if you've ever heard yourself say these words, or you've ever thought them, wow, this feels like I've been doing it all my life. You have been. You've been doing it all your life. And it didn't work out very well the first time. Okay? So I'm serious. If you feel this way, oh, I feel like I've known you all my life, run away. Or if you really have your codependency recovery on board, you can say, okay, here's all the good and not so good aspects of my parents' personality. Do I want to take this on? I mean, this is what functional adults do. I've heard them. I've heard them have these conversations with themselves. No, I don't think I want to do that for the next 10 years. If I want to deal with my parents, if I want to deal with the abuse, abandonment, and neglect that I suffered and experienced as a child, I'll go to freaking therapy. I don't want to marry it. What a concept. You mean I'm not going to work out all my wounds with my partner? No! Well, you can. But what a nightmare. Okay? Wound mates. Wound mates. Mates for not so great experiences in relationship. So you say, so let's say you go, well, I just feel like I've known this person all my life. This feels so comfortable. And you say to yourself, well, I'm in recovery, I know what this means. This means that I've got all of the, maybe not all of them, but a great many of my parents' negative and positive qualities, and there they are, wrapped up in this person here. So if I want to get in that relationship, I've got to have really good self-esteem, because every now and again, the ghost, my parents, will show up, and I'll have to wrestle them to the ground. Okay? So I've got to be able to get my own esteem from inside and know that it wasn't my fault. What happened to me? It wasn't my fault. I'm pretty precious. I was a gift to them. They screwed it up. Not my fault. I know my reality. I know what I look like. I know what I like. I know what matters to me. I know what my goals in life are. And if I start noticing that all of a sudden I'm changing my mind about those things, I'm in it. I'm in a love addiction. I'll be who you want me to be. That's love addiction. So it means you've got to have your reality on board. I got to know who I am. Seriously. And if they say something like, well, you know, I just love the downhill ski, then I would say, not with me. Nope, not with me. Oh, come on. Yeah, no. No, my reality is last time I did, I broke my nose. Don't want to do that anymore. Negative consequence. Don't want to go there. If I find myself going, I'm not drunk now. Maybe I won't break my nose. Well, yeah, I guess I can. Yeah, I'll go buy a new ski outfit. We'll go hit the slopes. I'm in it. I'm in a total love addiction. Whose fault is that? Mine. Mine. I just walked into it. So now, it's not your fault that I'm going to get in there and I'm going to be unhappy as my hands and toes are freezing to death as I go up the ski lift and I fall down and break my nose. It's not your fault. It's on me. I learned a lesson. I let my reality go, denied my reality, and said I'm going to take on your reality, because of course if I don't take on your reality, then you won't love me and you'll abandon me. You cannot abandon. You cannot be abandoned as an adult. I'll keep saying that. Somebody's going to get this. So, if I still want to be in that relationship, I got to keep my reality on board. Now, there are things that I might say, I've never tried that, I'll give it a try, but I've got to make the decision, and it has to be based on what works for me, not what I think is going to work for you so that you won't abandon me. Okay? Moderation. I don't need to get married the first time I meet you. As soon as I start thinking about sitting on the front porch of some nice place in somewhere, rocking back and forth with our grandchildren on my knee, I'm in trouble. because I don't even know you. You know, when I'm an adult and I'm in adult relationships, I have to take some time to get to know who you are. There is no way. And you know, the older you are, the more layers there are. So when you think, well, I'm old, I've got all this, I'm older, I've more experienced, I have blah 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 blah. You have more layers of book. And so does everyone else. So you take a little time and pull back the layers one at a time. If you stick around long enough and they stick around long enough and you have boundaries, you're gonna find out what all those funny weirdnesses are that you may or may not like, and that you may or may decide not to invite into your life. But trust me, if you're having sex before you know these people for at least 90 days, not good. People go blind when they start having sex. The priests were right. But you do lose your mind. You stop seeing who's in front of you. You stop knowing who this person really is. You start looking at them for who you want them to be. And that's always through this lens of what you didn't get from mom and dad. And you've just cemented all those wounds with this close sexual interaction. And then wonder why you're dying inside. Cemented it. So I tell my patients, when they're ready to start dating, which they must start dating when they've been in recovery for at least a year, or they'll go anorexic because, you know, this moderation thing does exist. Hey, you go out. You start meeting people. How do you meet people? Best way to meet people? Do the things that turn you on that you like to do. If you like to play pickleball, go find someone and play pickleball. Join a team. You'll meet other people who like to do those things. If you like to hike, and you know, God knows, we live in the Northwest, you can go hike with numbers and numbers of people. You can join the Mountaineers, the Sierra Club. There are so many people that you can meet doing this. But you're not meeting them to find a partner. You are doing your life. You're living your life. You're doing the activities and participating in life the way you enjoy doing. If you like to go to the theater, you go to the theater. If you want to speak French, you join a French club. If you want to kayak, you do that. It's kind of hard to meet people when you're reading unless you join a book club, but you can do that. So you're doing these things in your life. And you meet people that like to do the same things. There will be an attraction. So once the attraction's there, okay, it's solidified. Okay, I know I'm attracted to you. You've got at least some of the qualities of both my parents. And if I don't marry something about my parents, then I won't know how to act. Because that's who I learned how to be in relationship with from before I was born, practically. That's really basic stuff. You're not going to change it. Don't bother. You just know it, okay? So if you're attracted to somebody, you know, okay, I got my mom, my dad, and, you know, at least a combination on the hook. So we'll probably get along just fine. I'll know what to do, okay? So now what I want to do is if I start dating you exclusively, I'm going to spend the next 90 days finding out who the heck you are. I'm going to find out in every way, shape, and form who you are. I'm going to ask you about your family. I'm going to notice, do you do what you say you're going to do? That's the big question, in my mind anyway. If you're calling me and saying you're going to meet me for coffee at 2 o'clock and you don't show up to 2:30, I'm going to take note of that. Because at the end of the 90 days, what I'm going to do is I'm going to say, here's all the things I don't like. I already know I got these things I like, or I wouldn't be here, okay? These things I don't like. And the question I'm going to ask myself, can I embrace these? Can I embrace these things, hold them close, and say, live with it, Donna. This is what you signed on for. Because I don't know about any of you, but have you succeeded in trying to change someone yet? I do it professionally. Guess what? I don't change anybody. People change when they're ready to change. So if I'm thinking, well, there are these things, but yeah, I know they change. Because, I mean, after all, when we're married, or when we're living together, of course they're going to be on time. Oh, really? And what magic makes that happen? It's magical thinking. That's children. That's your wounded child. If I just wait here and be really quiet and do all the right things, then my mom and dad will be here. And then they'll love me. And then they won't abandon me. So you've turned it over to your little woundedness again to determine that. So what you do is you say, okay, so they're late. Can I live with that? So they don't brush their teeth enough. Can I live with that? They watch too much TV. Can I live with that? They like to fish at 4 o'clock in the morning on Saturdays. Can I live with that? They don't like to do dishes. Can I live with that? They hate Thai food. Can I live with that? They don't like to hike. Can I live with that? And if I go down this list and I find a bunch of stuff that I don't think I can live with, explain to me why I'm going to walk into that relationship just because it feels like good old mom and dad. That's really insanity. But is an addiction insanity? Those are the underlying issues. You see, with love addiction, the basics for that love addiction is with your primary caregivers, mother and father, as soon as you're born, if not sooner. There are so many triggers you'll never know about. You were pre-verbal. You didn't have the knowledge. You just reacted. You ever seen a baby? They hear the mother, I can tell you, when my son was born, he heard my voice and his little head, baby head, just whipped around. He couldn't see. He's blind. They can't see any more than this far. But he knew that voice, and his reaction to it was, bah. And when he could see me, he could spot me from across a room of a million grown-ups. He could hear my voice. He knew it. He could see me. He knew what I looked like. He could tell the color of my hair. Those are the things that are happening inside of each of you. And you have the same reaction. Whoa, over that. Oh, from across the crowded room. You do the same thing. It's not bad. Some good, some bad. But it's good to know. And the way you know is by getting into recovery for your codependence and your love addiction. If you want to change this, that's the way you need to do it. Okay? So let me repeat again. Getting in recovery for your codependence means getting appropriate levels of self-esteem. I am just as important as everybody else, end of story. I don't have to explain myself. I don't have to make excuses, rationalize, or justify my existence here on this planet. I am just fine. I belong. My reality, here's what my body is. That's how I present to the world. My thinking reality is the meaning that I give to incoming stimuli. And it's probably not the same as anyone else's. It's my own. I need to know that though. That's part of the engine that makes me me. So I need to know what I'm thinking. And I also need to keep that open a little bit. I mean, I like to think that I'm a little bit open-minded, that if anybody gives me new information, I can take it in. But that I know enough about my thoughts and about the way I feel that if I'm getting BS, I won't take it in. Or I will just say, I'll need to get back on that. I'll put it on my shoulder, ride around with it for a while. No, don't think that works. Out of there. Or right around my shoulder. Yeah, I think that would work. And I take it in. But I'm the only one that can do that. The minute I start doing it in order to get someone else to stay or go or love me, right, whatever it is I'm trying to get them to do, I'm in my love addiction. The other part of my reality is knowing how I feel. Yes, I'm a therapist, and yes, I use the F word, feelings. I need to know what I feel. I don't need to ask everybody what I feel or what I should feel. Should feel, feelings just happen. And the only thing you could do is to identify them and deal with them appropriately. Which means I express them. Now, for some reason, and I don't know, I'm sure no one in here feels this way. People get into recovery, they think that the hard feelings should go away. And they should just kind of feel this joy all the time. I haven't noticed that in the last 33 years of my own recovery. I will let you know if it happens. What I know to be true is that I learn, and I teach my patients this, your feelings are the rainbow of your soul. Learn them all. Get to know them all. Appreciate them all and learn how to express them appropriately. So if I'm feeling anger, it doesn't look like a gun aimed at somebody. It's just simply, you know, when you did that behavior, when you said those things, I felt some anger about that. No, nobody died. No fights got started. I owned it all. Well, yep, I feel angry about that. Or, I feel fear about that. Not, you make me afraid. No, you make me angry. I feel fear. I feel anger. I feel pain. I feel sad. Now, even in my doctor's office, you know, I'm sure they just sometimes don't know what to do. Because, well, you know, when you sit there and tell me I have all these things going on, I feel fear. She goes, okay. Hey, I'm just telling you how I feel. I don't have to sit there and go into my wounded child state. Go into a three-year-old, crawl into a corner and say, I'm going to die now. No, I feel fear. I feel some shame. Not much. Just, I know I'm not God, and that's enough for me. Sometimes I feel guilt when I do something outside my value system. But this all lets me know who I am inside. That's the one thing about my reality that I cannot change. Just because I want to. I can change the way I look. I can change what I think. I can change what I do and don't do. But I'm an addict, and I spent a lot of my life trying to change the way I feel. Guess what? Didn't work. So I befriended those things. And that's a good thing. Because when you know those things, then you can say, when you meet somebody, well, okay, first of all, I know that because they've got my attention, there's something about them that's like my parents. Okay, got that out of the way. How do I feel? I do feelings check all the time. Do I feel joy? Do I feel fear? Do I feel shame? Do I feel pain? Go through the list. Because I'm having this interaction. And, you know, somebody asked me, like, how can you, or at dinner, how can you be in a relationship with somebody that is not, when it's not crazy? Well, I'm telling you how. How do I feel when I'm with this person? Not they're making me feel this way. This just means that I've found a good mix of all those qualities in my parents. They're not all the bad ones. I got some good ones too. So when I'm feeling those feelings, I assign to myself because I know they happen inside me. It's just me having those feelings. And if I, after all that time, and look at all the things that I don't, you know, that might drive me crazy or something, and I decide to embrace them, and I still have all those feelings that I'm aware of, then I can say, you know, this might work out. Because here's the other thing. This is what I believe to be true, and I'm not the only one. I will say that there are a couple of us in this field P is one, I'm one. Oh, Pat Melody's one, he's great. We all believe that relationships don't have to be hard work. We do not believe that. I really don't believe that's true. I think it's hard work if you've just invited all the ghosts and all of the abuse and abandonment and neglect that your parents did, and you put them right next to you in bed and married them. Then rock and roll, because it's going to be rock and roll. But if you identify how I feel when I'm around this person, not to make them change, but because I need to be paying attention to how I feel, because I'm going to be basing my decisions about these relationships on how I feel and what I think, then I'd be saying, you know, I really like this person. I think that it would be a lot of fun. It certainly would be dramatic, would be chaotic. I could get my daily hit of adrenaline every single day. I don't think so. And so what are you doing? You're making a decision about a relationship based on facts. It's interesting because, oh, you can't take the love out. Well, if they're there, there's some connection. Don't worry about that. I've never heard anyone come in and say, after they've been in a relationship or they start a relationship, well, you know, I really like this. I really think that we have some good things in common, but I really don't like them very much. People don't come to therapy for that. I love them, but they drive me crazy. That's what they come to therapy for. I love them so much, but they drive me crazy. Which happens when you marry your parents that were less than nurturing. You loved them, but they drove you crazy. No, if you had a mother, say, that was always abandoning you, you'll probably be in a relationship with somebody who you're trying to get their you're trying to get them to stop abandoning you. So what do? You get in a relationship with people that aren't available. And why is that? Because you know how to do this. You know how. If somebody were actually show up and be there and be present and be available, you'd freak if you haven't done your codependency work. Oh God, I can't stand this. It's like being in prison. I can't get a breath. Basically, talking about them. Right? But when you look at yourself and say, God, I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to be in a relationship with somebody that's not leaving all the time. I better figure that out. But if your mother was like that, or your father, chances are you've done that at least once. Or let's say you have an abusive parent. You will be in a relationship with somebody who's always shaming you. What's the matter with you? Can't you do that right? How many times do I have to tell you I don't like that? Can't you do it right? Can't you be a good enough partner for me? I've heard, you know, I mean, I've heard the gamut. Things like, they get finished having sex, and the person turns to them and says, well, you know, that was pretty good, but when I was with so-and-so, you know, that was really good. It's pretty abusive. But if you grew up in a family where you were abused physically or emotionally and psychologically, that's just something you know how to do. Instead of saying, I think you need to leave now, it's like, okay, well, I'm going to figure this out so I don't screw it up. I got to figure this out. So I'll go have sex lessons. Maybe I'll become a sex addict. I'll do something to figure out, because obviously it must be me. I'm not doing it right. So it really is about those people. It's about your parents. And when you discover what those wounds are, and you have the emotional reality around them, and you start to get rid of that emotional reality, because you can diminish the impact, the emotional impact, on a daily basis by doing the work around your codependence, then that emotional energy doesn't have the power, the same kind of power that it would normally have if you didn't. It's that emotional energy that keeps you going after those people who will abandon, abuse, and neglect you. When you get in a relationship in recovery, you are doing it with your brain leading. You're saying, at least I'm going to give this relationship enough time. I'm going to at least give it enough time, as much time as I would a new house. If I'm going to buy a new house, I'm going to look at houses. I'm going to decide what I want. I'll go back and look at it and look at it. I think I like this one. I think I'll go back and look at it and look at it. Then I'll search and find out what all of the other houses are. You know what you go through to buy a house. I mean, most of us know this. And, you know, we would just go and say, I gotta buy this house, and the next day we're moving in. Nobody does this. I mean, there's even laws against it, for crying out loud. And if you don't like the house, you can sell the house. But if you don't like the relationship, well, okay, you can leave that relationship, but we all know how hard that is. So you think of it like, okay, if I can give myself 3 months to look at a new house before I buy it, I can give myself at least 3 months to look at this person that I think I want to be in a relationship with. And I'm going to kick every tire, I'm going to slam every door, and I'm going to determine, does this person care enough for me? Do they care enough for me? Are they kind? Are they gentle? Are they generous? Do they love my children? Is it okay if I'm a therapist? No? Do they want someone else? You want to look at it, you want to at least go through and decide, what are the real qualities? What do I want to wake up to every day? Do I want to have somebody that will say, wow, I see that you're not feeling well. Let me take that garbage out. That's not codependent. That's called being kind. Codependent is, I got to take that garbage out no matter what, even if it kills me, because if I don't, they'll abandon me. That's codependent. You say these things and you make the determination based on the facts and not just how you feel. Because if you're already feeling it, it's just going to be there. The feeling is there. You don't have to nurture that thing. If you're spending time with somebody, you're going to enjoy it. You know, you don't go in with a sour face. You have fun, but you notice things. And you ought to have an idea about who you think you might like to be with before you start going out. It's like, for me, I don't want to be with a therapist. Oh my God, what a terrible thought. So all therapists, out. Anyone in mental health, out. I think I'll include medical people in that, out. Okay, I don't want to be at work all the time. I want to be out of work when I'm out of work. I want to be doing something else. So I might be attracted to somebody who's a therapist, but I'm saying, Donna, honey, it's okay if you don't have a therapist in your life. You're your own. You go get one and pay them if you need a therapist, but don't marry one. You see? You think about these things. You also might think, do I want myself in a relationship? Because if you're looking for someone like you, back to square one. That's what 1, 2, and 3-year-olds do. They're like, they are uncomfortable and don't like anything that doesn't remind them of themselves. Because, of course, they're the center of the universe. And everything revolves around them. So if you want yourself, you got to go back farther in your codependency recovery so that you can get yourself grown up enough so that when you go out there, you can be with people, you can see them for who they are and accept them for who they are. Now, one of the things about love addicts, and that's why I'm not spending a whole lot of time on this part, but love addicts have a tendency to accept everyone the way they are for every reason into their lives. And what love addicts need to do is accept yourself into your own life. On a regular basis, you say, who am I? What am I doing? What do I think? How do I feel? Am I glad about that? Do I appreciate that about myself? That's not self-aggrandizement. It's not self-absorption. If you want to know you, you have to get to know you. And you're not going to do it by reflecting back what other people tell you. That should have happened when you're a child, and if it didn't, then you need to do it for yourself. I also suggest to people that when they're in this process, they get one or two people, two at the most, who they trust. And when you run into problems about, should I do this or this? What do you think about this or that? You ask them. You don't ask 50 of your best friends. And I would suggest not even talking about asking it in a 12-step group, because everybody has an opinion. And most people who have codependents can't make up their own minds anyway, and so when they get 50 pieces of feedback coming in about one thing, it's still overwhelmed. So, in order to be in a non-love-addicted relationship or avoidant relationship, what you have to do is your codependency work first, because those issues are natural consequences. See, when children are growing up in less than nurturing families, where they're being abandoned, abused, and neglected, they're all going to have love addiction, period. That's just going to be there. But the ones that have other addictions over those, they are distracting themselves from what's going on. So even small children, even babies, can distract themselves with sex and with food. They can withhold their own food. They can fondle themselves and distract themselves from intolerable reality. And they do. And then they get good at that, and they find out what distraction means, and they start distracting. And then they find cigarettes, then they find alcohol, then they find drugs, then they have gambling, and then they find work, and then they find everything else under the sun that a person could get addicted to. And those people are the addicts who are always distracting themselves. But people who don't have those other addictions going on, except for the sex and love addiction, it's like their addiction is absolutely about the underlying issues. That's why it's hard. With all the other addicts, they're distractions. They're symptoms. You got to manage those symptoms. You got to get in recovery for your drug abuse, your drug addiction, your alcohol addiction, your gambling addiction, before you can go in there and start to deal with that underlying disease of codependence. With love addiction, it is the disease. Only now it's grown up. Codependence, grown up, love addiction. Makes it very, very difficult. As I've noticed that over the years, is that alcoholics, when they take off, again, recover for their alcoholism, drug addiction, that's one layer of the onion. And later on, they find, oh, I got this eating disorder. Oh, and gambling is not a good thing for me. And, oh yeah, I probably work too much. And they just peel one after the other. And even addicts who are poly addicts, I'm one of those, that still underneath it is the love addiction, because it all starts there. But the love addiction, once you've gone through all of those other addictive recovery processes, the love addiction is still core and it's still big. But I'm sorry to tell you this, but it's a little easier to get in recovery for love addiction when you have all those other addictions on top of it. If you don't have all those other addictions on top of it, that's the thing. That's the big thing. It's the only thing. And it feels so normal. Like I said earlier, if it feels comfortable, if it feels normal, don't do that. You're just repeating the process. What you want to do is you want to find out, oh good, I'm feeling uncomfortable. Yay! I must be getting in recovery, because I don't feel very comfortable. It feels really weird out here. That's a good thing. Does that make sense? Okay. Good. There is hope here. I mean, people get in recovery for this love addiction. And and avoidant addiction. And I say, I'm probably more of an avoidant because I have all these other ones. Most of us act polyaddict, drugs, alcohol, gambling, eating disorders, all the whole bit, right? Like, we get that whole deal. And then we get to our love addiction, and most of us are avoidance under all that, primarily. The love addicts also have an avoidance side, and avoidants have a love addict side, but there's a primary side. Like, I'm primary love avoidant. So what I have to do when I get in a relationship, I have to go through, I do exactly what I'm telling you to do. It took a whole year of getting to know somebody before I made a decision. And it was a decision. Of course, so was she making that decision. So that was a good thing. Okay, nothing happens until the decision is made. And I want to know who I'm making this decision about. It's only my life. So I'll take however long I want to. But at least I'm taking 90 days. It took a year. And when I made the decision, I was fully aware of what wasn't working out. Okay, I'm not looking for perfect. And I went through those things, well, if this doesn't change, is that okay? Yeah, you know, I've got other people in my life, I've got this, I got that, you know, nobody's gonna do it all. But the main things, are they there? Yeah, they're there, they've been there for a whole year. I think that'll work out. And what I found out was that, really, it's not difficult. There is no major drama and trauma and up and down and all around. I've done that too. Oh my God. Felt like, kill me. I know what it's like. I did that love addiction thing once. I had deep understanding about that. It's horrible. Now, love avoidance, like, we're kind of lonely. And we kind of go out there and sometimes feel like we're being victimized by everybody because they don't understand us. But, you know, being in the love addict side is just devastating emotionally. And I have deep appreciation for that. But there is a way to get out of that. And you can't wait to feel like doing it before you do it. You just have to do it. Now, even if you're married, and you're in this love avoidant, love addiction chaos going on, you can still take time out and say, what don't I like about this person? Because, you know, even though I know that I'm not going to change them, it's good for me to know. Because if I know what I don't like about them, then I'm not going to go over there and light that fire. You know, I mean, what people do is they find out what the problems are and go over there and poke the hornet's nest a little bit just to get it wrapped up, get it ramped up, get the thing going. Because, you know, one of the things about love addicts, we love that intensity. We think it's love. It's just intensity. Once the intensity's over, keep trying to get it back. And it's like, it's just intensity. It will go away. Promise. And the only way to get it back is by becoming a sex and love addict, go out and find a new sex partner. Start it over. So if you don't want to do that, you stop it. You go back to rule number one. And this may sound like I'm obsessed about this, but I'm telling you, I work with lots of sex addicts too. And I work with all kinds of addictions for 1,000 years, it seems like. But what you're looking for is, I forgot what that one. Excuse me?
Rule number one.
Well, rule number one, yes, rule number one. No sex. We're not even having this conversation until we've been dating exclusively for 90 days. So that leaves me free to find out who you are, even if I want to be exclusive with you. I have to figure that one out first before the 90-day rule goes into effect. You see, these are really simple. If you do that, you're less likely, a lot less likely, to get caught in a nightmare again. People who have actually done this have come back and said, oh my God, done it. It works. I went for 90 days and then went 90 more because I wasn't sure I knew this person and decided I didn't want to be in a primary relationship with him, and we're still friends. No harm, no foul, nobody freaking out, nobody threatening, nobody turning into a stalker. It really works that way. The second you have sex, those days are over. You're in it now, whether you like it or not. And you can't tell me otherwise, don't even try. So, you know, it's kind of like when people say, well, how do I stop drinking? Don't put it in your mouth and swallow. Don't do that. Leave it over there on the table. How do I not gamble? Don't walk into the casino. Don't turn on that internet. How do I not look at internet pornography? Don't turn it on. Don't wait until you feel like it. Just don't do it. Things change after that. You stop drinking, you start getting sober, not the other way around. You stop acting out in the love addiction, you start getting your sanity back. You don't wait for your sanity to come back so you can get out of that love addicted relationship. You just get out, know you're going to live. You will live through it. And then you can go work on your codependency issues so that you don't have to keep doing it over and over again, expecting a different result. When you're in a relationship where there's love addiction going on, it's a hard road to get that love addiction out of there. And it requires both people to make a decision that we are going to do this differently. So even though I really want to tell you about this right now, I'm not. I'm just going to put my job. As I sit on your hands and close your mouth and breathe and say nothing. If you're already in one of those relationships, you have to be quiet when you want to say something the most. I just got to say it. I just got to tell them. I just got to tell them right now what they're doing wrong. Or what they made me feel. Or can you see that you caused me to do this? See what you made me do? See what you made me do? Oh my gosh. Be quiet. That's what you do. When you're already in a relationship that has love addiction, you stop the craziness by being quiet. And then when you're quiet, you do a reality check. How am I feeling right now? What am I thinking right now? Where's my boundary right now? I need to be self-contained. My partner has every right to say and feel and do exactly what they're doing, and they will whether I like it or not. My job is to be self-contained so that it doesn't leak over here onto me. Because whatever they're doing is all about them and their history, unless, of course, I went over and lit a fire under them. But if they're having just a reaction in their life, I'm going, look at them over there spinning like that. And the only thing I did was walk in and say, are we having dinner in tonight? See, is there something offensive about that? No. Yeah, I know my reality. No, I'm not offensive. I ask a question, they just went spinning. Wow, must be tough to be them right now. I think I'll sit here on my hands, close my mouth and breathe until they get done. And then when they're done, because they will be sooner or later, nobody can spin like that unless somebody's got to feed them. So I'm sitting on my hands, closing my mouth and breathe, and they find. Is there some way I could support you in going through whatever it is you're going through right now? How much fighting is going to happen? If I want to be in a relationship with you, I want to be your support. And, you know, if I say, is there some way I can support you going through what you're going through right now? Well, are they going to come back and slap me? Most of the time, people are kind of taken aback by that. What? Yeah, see, you're having a rough time over there. Is there anything I can do to support you? Yeah, I'd like you to leave the room. I'm out of here. Well, I'd like you to talk to me. Okay, I'm all ears. And then it's over. See, it doesn't have to be difficult or hard. It's not the rules. So that's what it looks like down the road. It's not easy, but just like all other process, it's not complicated, it's pretty simple. You just have to stop doing the one thing and do other things. And don't wait for yourself to feel like you want to.